people ask about like our evangelism strategy, but it's like we don't do big evangelistic events. We don't do anything except encourage people to pray for the people in their network and be intentional about investing in relationships with them, and then invite them to church, or invite them to your group, or invite them to coffee to talk about Jesus with them.
Yeah. And remember, right, I think we forget with Jesus, it took 3 years mm-hmm. with his disciples, right? Or around 3 years for him to invest in them, right? We just want like, hey, I met you. 3 weeks later, you are a fully trained disciple. Well done.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of his spirit, do better. So together, we can be a little better. Well, welcome back. Happy New Year. Guys, it's 2025. Do you remember like in school when you had to like write down like the year and stuff like that? I never thought I would ever see like 25. Like you'd have to write 25. Or like someone born like in the 2000s is now like over 20. I don't get that. But anyway, are you guys like resolutions people? Like do you like sit down and either plan out the year or anything like that?
I don't.
No?
I'm not a resolutions guy either.
I usually set some goals, but I just don't call them resolutions.
Okay, so what, like, or do you have like a picture for the year? Whether it's goals, resolutions, or whatnot, do you have like a, or even a word?
I'm trying to become more intentional around shaping the habits of my life around Jesus this year than I've ever been.
What would that look like? Or have you kind of nailed something like that?
I've like set up a habit tracker for myself. Ooh, so I'm
habit
like,
tracker.
Yeah, right. So like, part of it is for me, I've recognized that the seasons of my life when I've been more consistently journaling and particularly praying in my journal, I've been the closest to Jesus. And so I want to be intentional about building that habit this year more consistently. I started working on it last year. And so I just want to make that a daily practice this year.
You don't... I'm surprised.
I'm like a constant evaluator of my life. So I don't need the new year to like somehow be this turning point. Like I feel like I'm constantly like, hey... What should I do? I'm a dreamer too. So like I'm constantly setting goals and dreams and chasing them and crossing one off or deleting one. So the new year is just like not really that big of a deal to me.
Interesting. I love like the week between Christmas and New Year's. I've done this for the past maybe 5 or 6 years where it stemmed from like the Full Focus Planner, which highly recommend if you are not very good at goals or need a system. But I'll go to a coffee shop for like 2-3 hours and I'll just like try and, I'm not the most goal oriented person, but something to like have a picture of what I want to see for the coming year. I love it. Cause it's like, for
That's
me, I
so
do
surprising
see
surprising to me about you. Cause you would think we would be opposites,
totally,
right?
Yeah.
I would be to you and you would be me, right? So the fact that's kind of unique, that's fun.
So but, what's coming this year, Callum?
Well, I have heard that if you share your goals psychologically, it feels that you've already completed them. So I'm not sure if I should. But wow. I will say, so what I've done this year that I'm doing differently is it's a goal hierarchy. So if you imagine like one main thing and then there's like two other tiers of like the strategy that goes in towards the bigger goal. Mm-hmm. So I have like two like main things is health and discipline. Like I really need to grow in my disciplines. Mm-hmm. Not just spiritual disciplines, but that sense of like grit and determination and choosing to do hard things. I've kind of mentioned that in the podcast before. And in health, which is, I know the standard one, but whether it's emotional, I actually want to start therapy. I want to go to the gym. I want like certain like practices like that, spiritual ones as well. Those are the two, sounds a bit quintessential, but that's what I want to see. I want to try and uncover like the best version of myself this year that I can. Mm-hmm. But it's not, this episode is not about me. This is talking about vision. We're kind of unwrapping the what's coming up this year for the church, or at least like a, you shared about a vision or why we even have vision, how it's connected to our mission. So can you kind of give us just a brief overview? I mean, I see in your cups, you guys have the mission of the church on them, right? Yeah. Is that right?
Taylor made us cast some vision with our drinking.
More cups. Jesus, better coffee.
That's right. More Jesus, better coffee. That's not, isn't that our mission? Oh, wait.
Well, you tell us.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about how important vision is and how, why we need it. And we talked about what our vision is, right? Like we're a church that is about making more and better, how those work in unison together. Mm-hmm. And ultimately how, man, we want to see our area, from our neighborhoods to our schools, to the suburbs and the city be changed radically by, the gospel. And so we want to saturate Rochester with the gospel. And the way we do that, the way we fulfill that vision is through our locations, our campuses, but ultimately it's through our people, right? We give this imagery that our campuses are missional outposts. What makes them missional outposts is that our people there are the missional outposts that spread throughout that community. And so at the end of the day, you know, when I'm old and gray and ready to hand it off to someone else, right? I want to be able to see the tangible difference in our city because the gospel was preached, lived out, and people embraced it. And I love that I didn't get to talk about this much, but the imagery of saturate, right? Like you think of the snow when it melts, it saturates the ground, right? The ground is off. There's this tangible difference. And so I want people to, in Rochester, to like have a tangible, you know, difference in their lives, right? They have hope in the hardest seasons. Their marriages are restored. People are impacted in so many ways because of the gospel, the good news of Jesus.
I'm curious for both of you, like what energizes you like tangibly about seeing, like what comes to mind? What's the picture you see of like a saturated Rochester? Like what's different?
Yeah, I think, just the part of the metaphor that I get around saturate, and I know this isn't exactly the question you're asking, sure, but like if you've ever walked into the conservatory in Rochester, you know, at Highland Park, mm-hmm, and you get into one of those rooms where it's really hot and moist, it's like a rainforest in there. Mm-hmm. And that's just like, when I think of saturating Rochester with the gospel, man, I like for this place to feel like a rainforest of the gospel, that everything is just growing and thriving and green, even it, like that's the way it feels because of the gospel, not outside. Obviously, our weather is never going to be like that.
You're describing Scotland right now, where it's humid and green. And
yeah, right, exactly. I think seeing the gospel at work in the lives of people. I was just hanging out with my dad a couple days ago, helping one of the members of our community group move, and just reflecting to him the story of these two people who, when I met them, they were married but wanted nothing to do with each other, weren't living together, and now because of the power of the gospel in their lives, they're living together and they're married, and their marriage is, you know, it's not perfect and none of us have perfect marriages, but they're working together because of the gospel and the way the gospel impacted their lives and totally transformed their perspective. Mm-hmm. They're pursuing Jesus instead of like fighting each other.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's the kind of thing that I see, like, as I imagine, what does saturate look like? It's healing. It's those restored relationships around our community.
Yeah, I think I just see selflessness, right? I think at the core, when the gospel is tangible, you see people caring for others first. You know, we are, part of the reason why we're such a dark area is because we're so selfish. Even in me, like when the gospel is tangible in my life, I care more about my wife than I do myself. I care more about my kids. And I think that the tangible difference is that people don't see the world as what can I gain? How can I get more? It's this, how can we be a family? And like the best families serve one another. They care for each other more than they care for themselves. And like, I would love to see this area be that, where when people are in need, people step up, right? We come together, like that picture of moving, like, oh, you're moving. Hey, we'll be there, right? That's what family does. That's what my family has done for me. It's what church has meant. Like, that's just, I think it's this rid of selfishness and this humility that says, I'll serve anyone and everyone.
It reminds me of the book Art of Neighboring, where I don't remember the statistics, so I'm not going to pull out a random one, but the lack of knowing your neighbor's name to start off with is shocking. And to be able to care for someone, it can't simply be done in anonymity or in impersonally. There is a cost, like a relational cost to it, where you need to use some of your brain to get to know someone or know what are the needs that you have or that they have that you can help with or even be open to your neighbor, like receiving their care. You mentioned in the message that, I'll paraphrase it, but like Rochester is a fertile place for the gospel. I think you said it's like many people wouldn't want to come and minister in Rochester. Talk to us a little bit more about that. Why is that the case?
Well, I think, you know, from like a church planning standpoint, one of the main things they look at is a place that is growing, not shrinking. So New York is a shrinking area. Rochester, like the population is decreasing, not growing. So that's just like from like a logical standpoint makes sense. But really, it's just a area where like the last time I checked, which was a while ago, the statistic was 95% of the population didn't attend. Now, you would think that would compel somebody, but it's hard work, right? Mm-hmm. I served in the South as a pastor. And there was just this cultural, like, hey, we might not know Jesus, but we go to church. There's this knowledge here. It's just different. And one is not better or worse. It just makes it a little bit different in how you approach ministry. And I think for a lot of people, it's just easier to go to a place where there's this a little bit of knowledge of like, yeah, we show up. You know, I tell people from the South all the time, you know, if someone shows up to church, it takes that long to get them to come that there's a good chance their heart is softened to receive Jesus. You know, in the Southern world, people just have been convinced that, you know, following Jesus is legalism. And so different things you struggle with, but
that following Jesus is legalism. What do you mean by that?
It's rules, right? It's like, if you, people believe, man, if I show up to church and I do the right things, me and Jesus are good.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sure. Hmm. Yeah, whereas, you know, Rochester, I was talking to one of the folks at our church a couple of weeks ago. He's talking about, he's, you know, got some guys together for a Bible study on a Saturday morning, and he's, you know, casting some vision for, like, how they can be a community that is reaching their neighbors. And so he's met a few guys that don't know anything about Jesus or the gospel and bringing them in, talking about, so he's talking about worship one morning, and you know, he gets through this thing about how worship is a lifestyle. It's not just songs we sing. And this guy stops him and he's like, that all sounds great, but what is worship? What does that mean? Right. So like, we've got people in our community that like, are normal words, like, right? And he's coming from, he grew up in Rochester, but he's coming from Nashville and he's been there a little while. So he's like, yeah, like I got to totally reset my mindset when it comes to reaching Rochester, because our community doesn't know. It's just like totally different vocabulary.
Isn't that so healthy though?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes, as you talked about, like the South, where now I think Scotland is very similar to the north of, like, at least the northeast, in that if you're going to church, it's not because of like just simply cultural reasons. I think there's still a little bit of that over the US, more so in the South, but if I not in an apologetic sense, but in a way of like just being real about your faith, and it's not a fluffy ordeal where it's just like we're just talking about worship and everyone knows what it means, but it actually has to translate into something honest and pure and real and raw. Mm. That for, it's interesting you say that people have a hard time in the north, or at least in Rochester. I understand with declining population, I would really struggle in the south because I came from like mm-hmm. Scotland. That cultural Christianity thing kind of like doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense to me whatsoever.
I think both should lead to the same place, which mm-hmm. is heartbroken, right? Mm-hmm. Like we should be heartbroken for people who have convinced themselves of something, whether it's, you know, following the rules or, you know, being a Pharisee that somehow earns my way to Jesus, or this mm-hmm. just apathy towards God. Both of those are, they're really the same place, mm-hmm. just different tactics to reach
sure.
people.
What do you guys think we, as our church family, what do you think we are doing well and what do you think we're not doing well when it comes to our mission and our vision? Mission of making more and better disciples and our vision of saturating Rochester with the gospel.
I think when we talk about making more disciples, I mean, the fact that we have 24% more people than we had a year ago is like incredible. Just like we're talking about 400 or 500 new people, more people than were here a year ago. And that kind of growth in this kind of context is just like unbelievable. And it is the kind of thing where you can only attribute it to God, right? It's not like we have some magic formula, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. It's just the gospel and it's people. Just like you said, it's not that like we have these buildings and we have this incredible system or infrastructure or something. It's people inviting their neighbors right. to the hope that they have in Jesus. And so like, I love the picture that like, yeah, we create these missional outposts, but in some ways we're all missional outposts of the gospel. We all yep. carry the gospel around with us in our bodies.
Right.
And, as that's the way Paul talks about it. And so, I think we're doing something well, right? And that we have an incredible invite culture here. We have an incredible sense of family that really does resonate with people when they show up. Mm. And so I love that.
And I think with that comes a little bit of our struggle, right? Is just, I think we do a great job of reaching people who are far from God, right? Our church, really, if you look at the numbers, sure, there are people coming from different churches to our church, but there's a lot of people who just were ignorant to the gospel, who are hearing it and understanding it. But with that comes the struggle of like, how do we help people continue to take mm-hmm. steps, right? So on the front end, like someone comes to know Jesus, how do we get them to continue to walk, not like, oh, I got Jesus, now I'm good. Well, no, now we continue to look more like Jesus. So I think on that front end, we struggle a little bit. And even on the back end of like, hey, I've been walking with Jesus for 60, 50, 40 years. How do I continue engage mm-hmm. with the church beyond the levels that we talk about all the time? Or how do I re-engage or reinvigorate someone who knows all the right answers and shows them their place in the body to really serve and make a difference? I think with that, with our success, often your greatest strength can be one of your weaknesses. And so mm-hmm. I think that's one of the areas where I see like, hey, we need to help people just really, I don't love the word engage, but like engage is the word, or contribute, be a part of the family and yep. continue to raise the bar in your life.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so part of that is our community group ministry is doing really well. A lot of people are plugging into community groups and it's really encouraging. Some groups struggle and some groups are fantastic at helping us shape our lives around Jesus and become more like him and be disciples. But at the same time, our Equip ministry has struggled. It's hard for us to figure out how do we help people grow, mm-hmm. become better disciples of Jesus. And now I'm responsible for Equip. And I think part of our struggle is that it's just really hard to do. And part of it is that we've had kind of a revolving door of leadership over Equip. And now I'm in charge and I don't know what I'm doing. So,
<You look.
laughs> So, I think that's where as a church organizationally, we're trying to put some resources into figuring out how do we help people grow as disciples in a more effectively. But ultimately it's not something that we even do. It's something that God does in us as he draws us to himself and makes us more like him. So
I think that's one of the hardest things, like inside window into ministry, is you feel responsible to accomplish things that you can't ultimately accomplish. Right. And so our job is to like give people the resources and to set them up for success. And ultimately one of the best things we can do is just pray that God would move in the things that we provide, because God can work in anything and everything. And I think that's why prayer may be one of our biggest weaknesses. Even though we pray a lot, I always feel like we could be on our knees more for our people.
I mean, we've had so many conversations about discipleship, and I was talking to a sage from a guy I used to work with. His name's Tom Jensen, back in Chicago. And in our conversation, and I remember when we worked with him, or when my wife Carla and we worked together with him, he wrestled a lot with discipleship. And he made a distinction between a follower and a disciple, because I think in some ways we see it as synonymous. You believe, you're a disciple. And he's actually, that's actually not the case. The reason being is that a follower is someone who believes, but the differentiator of a disciple is that they help others become disciples, which you see even in scripture, there is those sort of distinctions where some people are going to become disciples, not necessarily a capital D disciple like one of the 12, but they are going to help others become more like Jesus and help others become more like Jesus. And honestly, I think there's a lot of followers out there that don't know that they aren't a disciple. And that shift between it's not about you, as you said earlier, it's selfless. That transformation of this city, this world, is selfless. It's not about us. And following Jesus should translate into helping others follow Jesus and become disciples. That is our mandate for more and better. And I'd love to see more people grab hold of that, that they're not just sort of backbenchers who have known the word of God for a really long time, but it doesn't translate into how do you actually help other people? That translation needs to happen.
I think ultimately that's the picture we're trying to create with that, this missional outpost language is right. Almost in the sense of like, ultimately our campuses aren't missional outposts if we aren't, because you know, we are the light. I love that imagery, the light of the world. Like we carry light, and that light is supposed to bring light into other people's. It's much like you said, a disciple just doesn't soak, right? Their light is broadcast so that people see it and want to experience it, and they help them. And then, you know, I always don't just make disciples. I heard a guy from, believe it or not, Chicago, his name's Dan Snyder. He said, no, we don't just make disciples. We make disciples that make disciples. And I think that's an important piece as a disciple, is it's not just my job to follow Jesus, but it's to help encourage, lead people to continue to follow
to
Jesus.
Do what he did.
Yeah.
That's a super nebulous thing.
It is.
Like, you're like, all right, just, and quite existential of like, just go, you as a disciple, go make more disciples. That's our, it's like, it's, I'll say cute leadership language. Totally. It's right. But where does the rubber meet the road for you guys in that? Like how do we, like, I'm thinking we're just starting off 2025. I'm thinking of a listener or a viewer who's like, I want to be more like Jesus. I want to help other people. I want to make 2025 more impactful for the kingdom of God. How do you encourage them?
I mean, this is where like some of my like just frustration comes out in the sense of like, come on, like, let's not overcomplicate this, mm-hmm. right? I think of my kids. How in the world do they learn anything? They hang around me. Mm. They watch me. I talk to them about what I'm doing, right? Like, that's exactly what Jesus did. He mm-hmm. walked around with his disciples, and when they had a circumstance or he taught them, they would be like, hey, what did that mean, Jesus? Or when he did something, they'd be like, why did you do that? Or why did you do it for that person? And I just think as Christians, we should be bringing someone alongside of us, right? Mm-hmm. And spending time with people. This is why it's important to know your neighbor's names and inviting them over to dinner for them to just see, wow, they pray before a meal. Like, mm-hmm. there's so much to just your presence with someone and them catching what you're throwing out there without you having to, you know, hey, I'm here to make disciples and I need you to be my disciple. It's the same with mentorship. Like, we use this word mentorship and everybody's like, oh no, what is this? It's you being with someone and allowing them to capture what God is doing in your life. And I promise that will eventually overflow. Mm-hmm. I'm off my soapbox.
Yeah, I mean, I think... people ask about like our evangelism strategy, but it's like, we don't do big evangelistic events. We don't do anything except encourage people to pray for the people in their network and be intentional about investing mm-hmm. in relationships with them, and then invite them to church, or invite them to your group, or invite them to coffee to talk about Jesus with them.
Yeah.
Or just talk, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like having your neighbor over for lunch on Sunday, or mm-hmm. allowing your neighbor to serve you.
And remember, right? I think we forget with Jesus, it took 3 years mm-hmm. with his disciples, right? Or around 3 years for him to invest in them, right? We just want like, hey, I met you. 3 weeks later, you are a fully trained disciple. Well done.
Do you know what's really interesting? And you mentioned this in the message, is that in Caesarea Philippi, where he's like, who am I? I don't know how long into the journey that was, but there was a long period of time where he didn't communicate to them that he was the Son of God.
He hid it from them.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not to say like you need to hide from like saying I'm a Christian, but there's a, for some reason, he wanted them to pick up what he was putting down, not by just him telling them explicitly, but them receiving the love, really the care, the leadership, the example, the spending time, like how he dealt with those situations mattered so much more. I don't want to say so much more. I don't want to like make it binary like that, but it mattered so much that they had to like almost distill it down over time for him to get, so now who do you say I am?
Right.
And that's pretty special.
And some of them weren't even fully sure yet.
Yeah.
Simon Peter is the one who was like, yeah, I know who you are. And I'm sure a lot of them were kind of on the verge, but they say before that, like, oh, some say this, some say that. I'm a little nervous to say it out loud. And you know, Simon Peter is never nervous to say anything out loud.
So I think sometimes in this conversation too, we feel like, all right, I don't feel like my faith is in a, rich enough, close enough spot with Jesus to be able to go and start a conversation with a neighbor. And I mean, you mentioned earlier about your kind of vision for the year of to like measure, I can't get this picture and you didn't say this, but like measure your gait off of Jesus. Mm. And seeing the rhythms of his life and trying to match them. And so maybe for you, it's actually, maybe I do need to spend some time measuring your gait off of Jesus by getting into the scriptures, spending the time with him. But I also don't think it needs to be either or. It can be both and.
Oh, sure.
That let's spend time with other people. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have your life in a perfect spot to be able to like get to know your neighbor's name, or even for God to use you in a transformative way for this mission that we are on. To make more and better disciples. And whether you're in Rochester, I hope that whether you are at Northridge, whether you are a family member at a different church in Northridge, mm-hmm. that we together can have a sense that we are on this mission and vision to see Rochester saturated and transformed with the gospel of Jesus. But maybe you're not, and you're somewhere in the country, maybe somewhere else in the world. If you're Scottish, by the way, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. But maybe you can join us in that picture of what can I do? What is the missional outpost that I can be to allow and give Jesus a chance to work through us to see this world transformed? Hopefully, we'll see you next week as we continue on in that endeavor. And hopefully 25 is going to be better than 2024 for all of you. See you next week.